This is what, 54? Yeah, 54.
Studio 54.
Studio 54. Episode Studio 54. Man,
this isn't very Studio 54.
We're not doing a Studio 54 episode. We're doing like the antithesis of Studio 54, basically.
We really should have planned this better.
Like, if you take whatever the cool is, like the cool level for Studio 54, this is like the exact mathematical inverse of it.
Did we do the thing where we started the show and I didn't realize it?
Yes.
Oh, here we go again.
Yep, here we go again. Back to our old tricks.
Year two of the show. Still, it's like year one.
That's right. My name's Max.
I'm Danielle.
And we're here today to talk about a lovely group from Akron, Ohio called The Waitresses.
The Akron Sound. Let's talk about
it. The Akron Sound, yeah. I really didn't know until doing some background research on them that like Akron was a hotbed for this kind of music.
For a minute, yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Devo was an Akron thing.
Really? Mm-hmm. How did I not know Devo was from Akron?
Oh my god.
Okay,
yeah,
well, that makes more sense now.
That was really like when... Oh, sorry. Everything is really loud.
Here we go.
Hold on. I'm going to turn down my headphones, too.
Okay.
Whenever people really talk about the Akron Sound, usually Devo is the thing that, like, is their main little stronghold in Akron. But there's also the Waitresses, Chrissy Hynde.
Yes. I did know about the Pretenders.
Yeah.
That makes sense, though. So the Waitresses formed in Akron in 1977, so it makes sense because Devo would have already been in existence.
They were starting.
Yeah. At that time. It was formed by a guy named Chris Butler, who was the founding member and the rock of the group.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking to his buddy Liam Sternberg. They were out at dinner one night, and they were complaining about not having any outlets for these other creative ideas they had. They were both in bands. So they each, as a joke, came up with a fake band. And Liam Sternberg's band that he came up with was Jane Eyre and the Belvederes, which is a great name,
love
isn't it?
Yes.
And Butler came up with a group called The Waitresses.
Because they were probably at dinner and they were like, look at those waitresses over there.
Basically, yes.
That's awesome.
That was kind of the idea. And then Butler just sort of ran with this idea of this Midwestern work aesthetic. You know, hardworking, mm-hmm. working class people.
Yep.
And like, what would they want to sing about? What would their music want to be about? So he started writing Waitresses songs. He recorded the first couple in 1978, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
He released a double-sided single with his buddy Patty Donahue, who called herself Patty Darling on the little
great.
Sleeve. Yeah. But they released a double-sided single, and I have taken horrible notes here because I don't have the name of the first song.
Slide.
Slide, thank you. The yes. B-side is called the Comb?
Clones.
The Clones. I can't even read my own handwriting. Can we just redo all of this? Jesus.
Yeah.
I'll explain why I was not familiar with these songs here in a bit. But I did. Now, having listened to them, you can hear the Waitresses Foundation in these two tracks.
I love Slide.
So this was the original Waitresses combo here, and we'll give you a little clip of these two songs.
Disposable men. If we break, throw us away.
So those two songs were on a compilation called the Akron Compilation that came out in the late 1970s, and that was the first Waitresses release. And I believe they were also pressed on a 7-inch
mm-hmm.
Somewhere. So it was around this time that Chris Butler decided to leave his group, The Numbers Band, and he joined another group called Tin Huey. And what would happen was, as they were touring with Tin Huey, Patty Donahue would come up on stage with them, and they would go, okay, we're going to do a couple songs by the Waitresses. And she would sing a few songs with them. So the Waitresses kind of started as a little shoot-off from Tin Huey.
Do people like the Waitresses more than Tin Huey?
I guess so, because I had never heard of Tin Huey until I started doing this research.
Yeah. Hmm.
But that was Chris Butler's...
Patty Donahue is a stage
springboard for the Waitresses.
She's just a star.
Yeah, Patty she is.
Like,
but
I can see that.
Kind of the coolest thing about her is that she is not like, she's not a musician. She's not a trained anything. She just was.
She's just cool as hell.
She's just a person who was cool
mm-hmm.
and just really captured like Midwestern aesthetic. And I really think that's why I love the Waitresses so much is I look at them and like, I see my family. Like Patty Donahue looks like my Aunt Michelle. And I think they're so representative of what Midwestern people look like and act like and sound like and how they behave. And I think that's just always why I had an affinity for them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just always thought Patty Donahue was the coolest. Like, I would just look at her and be like, that chick is cool. She just stands there. She, like, stands there kind of awkwardly but cool, and she isn't worried about what her voice sounds like. She's just kind of basically talking, and it's just cool to me. I think the waitresses are, like, the coolest.
Yeah, they are. They're super cool.
Oh, yeah.
So they, in this era where Patty was coming on stage with Tin Huey and they were recording songs, they one they did that was a real crowd pleaser was called Wait Here, I'll Be Right Back. This is a song that was retooled and retitled and became I Know What Boys Like.
Ah.
Which was, of course, ended up being the first waitresses, like their first proper single. So what happened was when Chris was touring with Tin Huey, he got a copy of I Know What Boys Like to a DJ in Manhattan named Mark Kamens. And he was like, well, dude, where's your band? We need a B-side to this if we're going to put it out as a single. And he kind of lied. And he was like, oh, well, they're all still back in Akron. So he says that he wired Patty Donahue his last $50 and got her on a bus to Manhattan. And they recorded the first Waitresses album.
That's so cool.
Out of that in 1980.
That's really, really cool. Yeah.
So, yeah, that album was called Wasn't Tomorrow Wonderful, and the first single was the beautiful I Know What Boys Like. And isn't it, I mean, I think this song is still a cultural phenomenon, don't you? I mean, I think most people know this song.
I think, yeah, to me, everybody knows this song, whether you're a new wave person or not. Like, I Know What Boys Like, it's ultimate Patty Donahue cool, which, like, she's just like, haha, sucker. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's just such a perfect little, like, sexy anti-sexy song in a way.
And yeah, totally.
Just, and it just captures that era to me. I don't know.
Like, I agree.
I just love it, and every time it comes on, you have to listen to it.
Right.
And dance. And
when I think of like great songs from that era, 1980-81, I think of this one, and I think of Romeo Void's Never Say Never. And they kind
these
of
are it's the
same. Yeah, it's the same kind of attitude.
It's like that very monotone vocal thing where it's just like that kind of, in a way it's detached. It's like sexy, detached.
It is, like, but like it's weird because it's a come on. It's flirtatious, but it's also guarded. It's guarded and it's stilted, and it's amazing that she's able to get both of those very separate emotions apart in her delivery.
I love it
with no training.
Maybe if she were trained, it wouldn't have been nearly as cool.
Definitely not.
Anything you want, you can trust me. I really want to. You can trust me. Sucker. I know what boys like. I know what guys want. I know what boys like. Boys like. Boys like me.
So then, in stark contrast to I Know What Boys Like, they drop the single No Guilt. Now, this one is where the vulnerability is way at the forefront, because this is kind of like a, well, I didn't need you anyway sort of song.
I love that.
You know,
I love the whole idea.
It's like, well, I don't care that you're gone. Hey, guess what I did? Hey, guess what I did? Hey, guess what I did? I learned how to drive a car. I fixed the sink myself. I got some new records. Hey, I learned how to mail things by myself.
Yeah.
I called the phone company all by myself. You know, it's just,
I love it.
Yeah.
It's such a good song. I love the whole idea of her being like, super cool again. It's very cool. Just like, I don't need you. I can do all these things now. Who are you even? Go away. I love it.
I'm sorry, but I don't feel awful. It wasn't the end of the world. I'm sorry, I can't be helpless. It wasn't the end of the world. I know someone who really met Belushi. I fix a toilet so it doesn't.
We're only going to touch on one more from this first record, but please go listen to It Wasn't Tomorrow Wonderful. There are so many other great songs on it, but let's talk about Pussy Strut.
First of all, title.
Yes.
Thumbs up.
I just grabbed this one because I thought it was the best capture of Patty's attitude.
Oh yeah, I love it. And this is also just like perfect early 80s new wave rock. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's energetic. It's cool. It's got weird lyrics like, look at the butt, Pussy Strut.
Right.
And like, how can you not?
But you know what she's talking about. You know, when you walk by in a cat and they've got their little tail in the air and they're going, look at my butt, look at my butt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get it. It's great.
Up and down, vertical. Crisscross.
So the Waitresses would release an EP the following year called I Could Rule the World If I Only Had the Parts, which is an awesome title. Mm-hmm. And they dropped this Christmas single.
Of course.
And who knew?
What's cooler than Christmas?
Who knew in 2017 people still love this song?
Oh, yeah. And they probably don't even know who does it most of the time. They're just like, oh, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't. All of our thoughts on this you can hear in our Christmas episode because we've talked about this song before. And I told this story about a woman calling me when I was working in small town radio wanting to hear it. And just, yeah, this is a universally loved song. I don't know anybody who doesn't love this song.
I don't love it, but I, you know, it's...
Okay, I know one person who doesn't love this song.
I like it. I don't love it. Like, I could never hear it again and be fine.
Wow. Yeah, so the odd thing that we didn't talk about last time we talked about this song is that Butler thought this was a throwaway for a Christmas compilation album because it was a common thing mm-hmm. in that time, as we talked about again on the Christmas episode, where a label would get a bunch of their artists together to record a Christmas song, and then they would put out these Christmas compilations, like Winter Wonderland was one we talked about. Well, Z Records, which was the Waitresses' label, did this too. So that's why Chris Butler wrote Christmas Rapping. So by the time they got their deal with Polydor, it was like, oh, by the way, I kind of recorded this song for my last label, and they're kind of releasing it, and it's kind of getting a lot of airplay right now, and I kind of forgot to tell you about it because I thought I wrote it as a joke throwaway. Whoops.
Whoopsie.
So he avoided getting in a little bit of trouble with Polydor for that, but he almost got roasted by this, according to him. By them, wow. For this, rather, according to him.
Really?
It was also on this EP that they put out their version of the well, not their version. They recorded the Square Pegs theme.
Yeah, can I just talk a minute just about Square Pegs?
Yes.
One of my favorite shows of all time. The reason that I got into 80s music is because of Square Pegs.
Wow.
So it used to come on like late 90s, 2000s, late at night on Saturday nights on VH1, and I would be at home watching it, and I fell in love with Square Pegs. And I loved the theme, of course, but the moment, like, it's just such a, if you've never seen Square Pegs, like, there's two seasons, buy the DVD. It's the only DVD of a show I have ever bought
wow.
in my life. I love this show. There's a moment where Devo gets on there.
That's true, and they perform.
That was the moment
our favorite. Favorite Devo song.
Yeah, that's good, where you play it, Muffy's Bar Mitzvah.
That's right.
And it's super cool and awesome. They do That's Good, and that was the moment when I was like, 80s music is for me, especially Devo. Yeah, so I love that they did the theme to this because it's so perfectly Square Pegs, and oh, I love it. Just go watch Square Pegs and listen to the song, I guess, too, but watch it.
Square Pegs. They also tossed out a single in this EP era called Bread and Butter.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of this one?
I mean, I think it's cool. It's like that weird economic struggle thing, which I found interesting. They were making that cool. Yeah, I mean, I like this song. I enjoy it. It's not as iconic to me. It's a little bit forgettable to me. But
yeah, but it is. It's very in line with their aesthetic, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
The whole working class. Yeah.
It fits totally.
Tell me, say it again. Trust in malls and movies. That's how the
So we move on to Bruiseology, which is the Waitress's proper second LP. And I want to read a little Chris Butler quote to you here. I thought this was so interesting when I was doing this research. Mm-hmm. He says, by the time this album came out, that, quote, "I had begun to think of the Waitress's project as a trilogy. The first record was the introduction, Girl Meets World. The second one was about our heroine's trials and tribulations and about the sobering reality of realizing that you're an adult. And then I was going to figure out how to end it with a third act that would be absolutely joyous and triumphant with our protagonist facing the world and achieving fulfillment."
Wow.
So this was, Bruiseology was meant to be the heroine, Patti Donahue playing her, I guess,
yeah,
realizing that she's an adult. And I really think that's a good way to describe the aesthetic of this record as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I see that. I didn't realize that Chris Butler was thinking about it so much. I had no idea. I just figured it was music. Yeah, no, this I can see that. I don't know. It's a different kind of album for them. A little bit. It's a little poppier. It's a little more mainstream. It's less that sound at the beginning. Like, Make the Weather to me sounds like a regular song that is like on the radio and fits with the radio.
Yes, I think they definitely tried to make a radio single with Make the Weather.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it charted for them. I don't think it worked either.
I don't think it did.
But yeah, this was definitely a dig at making a radio single. And I think that by this time, and we're going to talk about an artist who went through this even more next week. But I think it was like they broke through with a novelty hit, and then forever, mm-hmm, it was like, okay, well, we're not a novelty group. I actually have an aesthetic that we're going for here. And I think that Make the Weather was kind of his attempt at doing a non-novelty hit song.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. We talk a lot about those kinds of artists on here because they'll have one hit that's novelty or not. And then it's, you know, it's trying to get like Tony Basil's kind of like that. Mickey became that.
Yeah.
You know, it just, you can't get away from that. It's hard anyway.
We're going to talk about a song that I don't think you've heard. It's called Everything Is Wrong If My Hair Is Wrong.
I haven't, but I love the title, and it's so true.
In an interview with Chris that I read, he talked about how having Patti around in the group was so great because of her attitude and who she was as a person. She would often just say things that he would take and run with ideas. And she said this one time as they were running to perform on stage, "Well, everything's wrong if your hair is wrong."
She's the best.
And so he took that and made this song out of it called Everything's Wrong If My Hair Is Wrong. And I mean, good Lord, who hasn't felt that way?
I felt that way yesterday.
The album's title track, Bruiseology, this was one of the last ones that they recorded, and I'll get to why in a moment here, but this is probably my third favorite Waitress's song behind, really? Yeah, behind I Know What Boys
Really like
and
it.
Christmas Wrapping. I think this one's number three. Yeah, I just, it really captures that high energy, and it's got the, mm-hmm, you know, the real dorky horn sounds that they were, you know, they were such dorks.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, that's why people who like them for that reason. Just, they're cool dorks.
The chorus flows, like, you'll get it after hearing it one time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, just really killer song. So during the recording of this album, there were tensions were running very high in the group, mm-hmm. and Patty ended up quitting for like 2 or 3 weeks. And it was during that 2 or 3 weeks that they actually recorded Bruiseology. So the version that ended up on the album with Patty's vocals was recorded later. Mm-hmm. So when they recorded it, bassist Tracy Wormworth stood up and sang the lead vocal on the track. They would later release this version on this compilation, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But the Tracy Wormworth version, I love, 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 because in her voice, I can hear that she's trying so hard and she really wants to like impress everybody and show, hey, I can do this and yeah. I can nail this vocal. And she does a killer job too.
Yeah. It's different though. I mean, I don't know. I just like Patty's better because it's Patty, you know?
Of course, Patty's Patty. But Patty's,
there's
something so sweet and special to me about that Tracy Wormworth version of the song. And I just love it. I can go back and be the girl that I was before. It's easy to admit I don't have the guts. But do I ever take things so lightly? I am a fighter. Will surrender all that I've gained. I say there's a conflict here. The right thing to do is not clear. Beat my brain up. Trying to fit the two sides together. Then you hit me with a heart attack. Then everything cracks. And that's a bruiseology. And then you hit me with a heart attack. So that version you just heard with Tracy Wormworth is available on this compilation that I'm going to talk about. This came out in 2013. It's a Waitresses compilation called Just Desserts, the Complete Waitresses. They did a fantastic job with the liner notes and art and everything. And there's a big, long intro written by a guy named Scott Schinder. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. But he basically tells the entire story of the Waitresses. And it's just very, very cool to get it firsthand.
Yeah.
And this has every single Waitress's item you could want, except it's only missing, and this is why I said at the beginning I didn't know about them, it doesn't have those very first two songs that were on the short stack 7-inch single. It does not have those two, but it has everything else. It's got the whole If I Could Rule the World If I Could Only Get the Parts, that whole EP. It's never been released digitally before, but... here it is. So this came out about 4 years ago. It is worth picking up if you love the Waitresses, because this is the most comprehensive collection that exists of their music. It's a 2-CD set. It is lovely. Yes, cannot recommend it enough. And I actually think most of their music, too, is on Spotify. So if that's your thing,
I think it is, too.
Check it out there. Yeah, just lots of cool little promo art and artwork in there. So anyway, I'm done plugging that CD. But I love the Waitresses. Everyone should love the Waitresses. They're just amazing. Oh my
God. Totally. Yeah.
We should note, I guess, that Patty passed away in the 90s. So that's why, we haven't heard anything out of the Waitresses in quite some time. It wouldn't be the Waitresses without Patty. It really wouldn't.
Oh yeah. No, Patty is just a force to be reckoned with.
Chris does note in the liner notes here for this, that the Waitresses has always felt like unfinished business. And I think it's because he never got to finish that trilogy idea that he had. So, I don't know. It would be interesting to think about what that third Waitresses album would have been like had they done it. Like, I kind of love the idea of, like, victorious, enthusiastic Patty Donahue.
I don't know if I can even imagine victorious, enthusiastic. I don't know if it would have worked. I don't know. Maybe it was meant to be unfinished.
There you go. Their story is left unsung.
Their niche is unfinished.
That's right.
There it is.
I love them. They are the working class Midwest to me. And I think if you're from this part of the country, especially, you will find them very relatable and wonderful.
Oh yeah. They're the best.
So we will be back next week with another fantastic episode and another artist that could seemingly never break away from a novelty single.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be back for that next week. In the meantime, you can get at us on our website, which is offbeattrackscast.com.
And we're also on Twitter @offbeattracks.
Yeah. So we'll see you next week. I'm Max.
I'm Danielle.
See ya.